Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield. Today's podcast that you're about to hear was kind of weird because I got psychoanalyzed, and that's something I haven't really done before on a show, but I think you'll kind of enjoy it. We talk a lot in the episode about careers and about choosing the right career for you based on your psychoanalysis.
Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses. And keeping your mitochondria strong is one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use a special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's five-minute workout just three times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office. My cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. Carolbike.com. I get laughed at, maybe because it's a little bit woo-woo, esoteric, invisible, whatever, but I use quantum energy. I pray over my food when I eat. I try and emanate positive emotions and feelings towards people. I do like little breath work and Tibetan longevity exercise moves to charge up my body with invisible energy. And yes, I even blast my home and my body with certain quantum energy products like necklaces and little boxes that I can use to charge up food. And I get this all from this company called Lila Q. Now, I realize that some quantum energy stuff is not provable by science, but Lila does have third-party studies revealing a remarkable 20 to 30% increase in ATP production, a vital process for cells. Quantum energy has over 59 studies already done and counting. These are randomized double-blind studies these folks are doing for blood quality and HRV optimization. I can't explain it, okay? I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I can explain how quantum energy would increase blood energy or blood quality. Could be placebo. I don't know. But all I can tell you is I wear their necklace. I use their products. I blast my home with their energy. And it's called Lila Q. I've got a podcast with them, a few, if you want to take a deeper dive. But you just go to the website. Check it out. It's kind of fun to surf around. And you know what? If anything, you're going to have some cool-looking conversation products at your house and hanging around your neck. I love them. Lila Q, LEELAQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off. LEELAQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off.
In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show,
you have an innate ability to compartmentalize your emotion in order to get a job done.
So what I'm doing is I'm integrating attitudes and behaviors based upon emotions. Not many people are doing that.
Optimism is a emotion that resides in the limbic system, where religion comes from, where certain highs from recreational drugs come from, where sexual arousal comes from. It's a feeling part of the brain. You don't stay in there.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power. Speed. Mobility. Balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield, and I have a confession to make to you. I actually am not a fan of personality questionnaires or ways that folks get analyzed. I've always thought that stuff was a little bit, I guess, kind of woo-woo and ethereal, and it never seems to really reveal much about myself. And so I was a little bit hesitant when one of my friends, who I trust implicitly and whose advice I actually listened to, recommended that I have something done called a behavioral analysis. And the fella who does the specific behavioral analysis that I took is considered to be kind of an anomaly within the world of behavioral analysis. I don't know if you would call him something like the horse whisperer for people or how you would describe him, but everyone who I've spoken with has told me that this guy can literally tell you almost more about yourself than you know about yourself when it comes to the way that you tick. And so I buckled and I went ahead and I took this fella's behavioral analysis profile. No clue what I was doing. I just answered all these questions and basically kind of gave my knee-jerk reaction to each of the different little pieces of this analysis that I completed online. And I sent it off, and voila, today I have actually gotten this particular behavioral analyst, let's see if I can use my words today, on the show to fill me in and you in on how behavioral analyses work and exactly how I'm personally wired and whether or not I'm completely clinically insane. So my guest name is Steven Sisler. Steven Sisler. Now, Steven is actually a guy who is well known in this community. He works with clients in more than 18 different nations, gathering behavioral, emotional, and attitudinal information on people working in corporations, people working in personal settings, and then he takes the results of those and develop strategies for leadership, for teamwork, for entrepreneurial success, for career direction, etc. So he's considered to be kind of a go-to source for issues when it comes to figuring out the way that you think, the way that you operate, and then applying that to your life. I'm probably doing not the most fantastic job describing exactly what he does, because I'm going to learn just as much as you about that in today's episode. But he's lectured all over the world, everywhere from the Vineyard Leadership Institute to Mastermind Talks, where I initially met him and had the opportunity to hear him speak, the Entrepreneurial Organization's Global Leadership Conference, Sydney, Perth, Adelaide, Melbourne, Brisbane, Auckland, Switzerland, MIT Boston. He's been all over the place, and so he's quite well-known and respected in this whole behavioral analysis community. So, Steven Sisler, welcome to the show.
Now I've got to live up to that.
I guess so. And my first question for you, man, is how does one actually come to do what you do? How did you learn all this?
Well, I've actually been reading people since I was about 12. I could tell if somebody was lying. It was really bizarre. Now here's what's even weirder. My mother could do it. The phone would ring and she'd know who it was. Her father could do it. So I don't know what that is. I'm not a
really interesting,
you know, spiritualist or anything like that. And I don't even want to go there because I'm very practical, but I have a knack for it. And so when I discovered that you could be actually trained in behavior analysis, I did it and instantly became extremely successful. As a matter of fact, the man who trained me, Grant Masmanian, is a behavioral profiler and in Media, Pennsylvania. He said, out of 30 years, I'm the star student. So it's just one of those things where I did it. I felt like I would be good at it. And I ended up being fantastic at it.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
I'm reading a book right now called The Medical Medium. Have you heard of it?
I have not.
Okay. It's about this guy who was able to diagnose people's medical conditions from the age of like 8 years old. He could literally look at people and stare into their eyes and look at their body and tell them like what parts of their body were operating our way. I'm trying to get him on a podcast as well, but there is something kind of weird there, how some people are just born with these crazy skills. And, and yeah, I have yet to wrap my head around how that all works, but it's pretty funky.
Right.
So the other thing that I've been told, Stephen, is that your method of profiling is different than many of the other methods out there. And I'll readily admit, just because I kind of shy away from behavioral analyses. Again, it's just not something I've ever really gotten into. Mm-hmm. I'm not really too familiar with many of the methods out there, but how would you describe how your method of profiling someone is different or unique?
Well, my method is, in some ways is similar. I put you through a behavioral analysis, which basically measures four emotional pieces to your, they're called primary emotions. Now we have more than four, but the primary emotions are the emotions that really are going to dictate how you're going to act. And so what I've done is I use what's called an advanced DISC model. So the DISC, which is people are very familiar with, I use as a springboard in order to get the numbers. So I'm measuring four emotions. And once I find out where they set on a graph, then I will know a lot. And so what I do is I integrate the four primary emotions into what are known as the seven attitudes, which I measure. And when I take these, I put them together like a tapestry, and I look at it as a whole. From what I've been told, I'm one of the only people who can do it. Now, somebody who did it before me was Dr. John Geyer from the 70s, and he's kind of a sleeper. You don't hear a lot about him, like Tesla. He did a lot of inventing that other people got the credit for. And so I basically work off of his ideas and his methods, but only I intuitively did it until somebody came forward, a good friend of mine and partner in business called Zeke Lopez. He said, Steve, here's the data based upon years of research that back up what you do intuitively. And so that's what I ended up putting in my book, showing how I've been able to come up with this. And so that's really what I'm doing. So what I'm doing is I'm integrating attitudes and behaviors based upon emotions. Not many people are doing that.
Okay. So you actually threw out a few things there that I wanted to clear up. The first thing you said was that the type of behavioral analysis you do is an advanced DISC model. Mm-hmm. What does DISC stand for?
Okay. DISC is it's a model of an assessment that measures four emotions: anger, optimism, patience, and fear. So those emotions can have intensities. In other words, if it's really high, then it's intense. If it's above 50, it's considered in play. So if you have an anger emotion that's above 50 when you measure it, then your anger emotion is in play, and therefore you will act a certain way. The one I have is extremely accurate. Not all of them are the same. I mean, people go online and can get them for free. People pay a lot of money for me, but they're not paying for the assessment. They're paying for me to look at the numbers and then tell them what these numbers are going to mean. That's my niche. But I'm not doing the DISC only. I'm doing the DISC, and I'm also doing something similar to the Hartman values profile known as an HVP, which you did. So I'm looking at your worldview.
What'd you say that was called? A Hartman values profile?
Yeah, HVP, the Hartman values profile. Okay. Dr. Robert S. Hartman, who's really the father of human decision-making theory, created this algorithm. He was a mathematical genius. In its 40 years of his work, he was actually nominated for a Nobel Prize on it. Extremely accurate. But who's going to read it? You see, I've had people just come up to me at random with numbers from a profile they took that I'm not even associated with.
Yeah, that's
the
thing.
And I basically told them, here's what's going on with you.
Yeah.
So it's not as much about the assessment as it is about my read on people.
Okay, got
it. I've looked at an assessment and then started talking to somebody and knew the assessment wasn't even correct.
Interesting. Yeah, see, that's the thing that I seem to run into with some of these tests is you'll get random letters. Like I remember one that I took, you know, categorized me as an ISTJ or EFTP. I don't even remember. You get all this
Myers-Briggs.
Yeah, you get this big this alphabet soup of letters and categories that you fall into, but then it's very difficult to actually figure out what you do with that information. And so what you do is you look at all this information, these four primary emotions, these seven attitudes, the results of the advanced DISC model, the Hartman values profile, and then you basically tell people how they tick.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and have some fun here and dive in, because I took this profile and I think perhaps using me as an example could be a good way to fill people in on how this actually works. And by the way, for those of you listening in, I'm taking notes. I'm going to link to Stephen's book, his website, the information on these profiles and all this other stuff. If you just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/behavior, that's bengreenfieldfitness.com/behavior. You can access the show notes, because I can already tell this episode is going to be dense with info. So, Stephen, how do you like to go about doing this?
Okay, so I'm going to begin with your emotion set, which is your behavioral profile. Then we're going to move to your attitudes, and then we'll move to your decision-making pattern.
Okay.
And do three different things. You took three different assessments. So let's begin with your behavior. So your behavior is based upon four emotions, and I'm measuring them on a scale of 0 to 100. So I'm going to begin with your anger emotion. So your anger emotion, you ready for this, Ben? Comes in at a 98.
Wow.
So you are less than 2% of the population.
I'm not sure if I should feel proud of that, or if it sounds like a bad thing.
Okay, I know, but it's not. And this is where people, they just don't understand how these things work. Anger is about decisiveness. So you are a decisive styled person. In other words, if you don't have problems and challenges, you're going to get extremely restless. So the higher the anger emotion goes, the more problems and challenges we must have. If you don't have a problem and a challenge, you're going to create one because you need them. You rise to the occasion when everything is against you.
Interesting. Yeah.
And that brings you to life. And so you live a life where constant challenge keeps you going. It keeps you engaged. Okay. If you were low here, you'd be passive. You would be avoiding problems and challenges, and you become a conflict avoidant. But you're actually a conflict creator. So you create conflict for yourself so you can overcome it.
Interesting. But both I and probably even much more so my wife would very much agree with you. I do, as our listeners know, sign up for incredibly masochistic events all over the globe and use those as challenges, as carrots on the end of a stick. And part of that is due to my high anger drive. And so does that mean I'm an angry person, or does that simply mean that I like to engage in conflict?
It means you like to engage in conflict. Mm-hmm. Now, some people can have a very high anger emotion, but because of their attitude, they end up somebody else. You know, they could be like an ass. Hmm. And so that kind of a style, people see them coming, they go the other way. You like challenge. You're very challenge oriented. So you need challenge. You create challenge for yourself. That doesn't necessarily mean you're a challenge to everyone else. But people in your life will feel like they're trying to keep up with you because you're like a snowplow going 90 miles an hour.
Hmm. Interesting.
And so if you get in front of that, you know, you could get hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I mean by that is it's uncomfortable for a passive style to be doing something with you because you're so nuclear. Now, a 98, that's as high as this algorithm will go.
Wow.
So you're topped out. All right, let's move off of that. Let's go to the influence line, which is I in DISC, and it's the optimistic emotion. Okay? You're coming in at a 23. Okay? And what that means is, instead of being an emotionally driven person, you're driven by logic. Okay, so this means you do not dwell in your limbic brain. You are more in your rational mind. In other words, you want proof.
Hmm.
Because people that are logically driven are matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
They're incisive. They're logical. They're suspicious. They're reflective. And so your style is very matter of fact. You're like a realist.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is you're not a pie in the sky style. You have your feet firmly planted on the ground. And so if you ask me, Steve, are you going to the meeting today? And I'm not going, I can look at you and just go, no.
Right.
And you're good with that. You might do the same thing to me. You don't want to make a conversation. You want to give me the results of my question.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're very results oriented. So people will misinterpret that as maybe you're not interested in them.
Yeah, I've gotten that before, aloofness or arrogance when I'm simply short and get straight to the point.
So people see you. Now, this is how they see you, and only certain people will see you this way, but it will be between 47 and 52% of the population will see you as arrogant.
Interesting.
Even though you're not.
And that's because of the high logic drive, the basically
yes, high logic.
Kind of the ability to detach from emotions and simply have a simplistic black and white yes and no response to things.
Yes, that's right. Hmm. So people don't see you as you are. They see you as they are.
Interesting.
And 98% of America are not dominant.
They're not. What do you mean they're not like dominant? You.
It means you're a core dominant, which means when you're being you, the only emotion in play is anger. Which means you are aggressive, pioneering, quick, no-nonsense, decisive, venturesome. You do adventure or nothing.
Yeah, yeah, that's perfectly true. You know, what's very interesting is a lot of times I will talk to someone about you know, something that they think about me based on some kind of a questionnaire or an analysis like this. And my knee-jerk reaction is, well, that could apply to anybody, right? Like somebody says, mm-hmm. you really enjoy nature. And I'm like, oh, great. Thank you for pointing out that, you know, something that, that is probably true of most people. But so far, the first two things you've told me about myself, these two things, they really are true. So I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
Okay. All right. So let's look at your patient's emotion. You're coming in at a 52, which means because your dominant emotion and your patient's emotion, so anger and patience are opposite. So if they're together, we get passive aggressive. So it's like having a cricket on your shoulder that when you're about to pull the trigger, it just says, you sure you want to do that? Like this quick, boom, little question that you are really good at overriding it. You're like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You hear it, but it doesn't stop you. And so when you're adapting, it drops down to a 49. Now, in this world, you know, high, low, 50 or above is high, 50 and below is low. So 49 is low because it's below 50,
right,
even though it's just 1 point.
Okay.
Okay. So because of that, you become, when you're working or doing your thing, you become what I call the machine. So
yeah, that's absolutely true.
You're not human at that point. You are a machine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not just saying this because of who you are and what you do. These are the numbers.
Yeah. No, I have certainly been accused of, or others have observed that about me before. When I'm working, I simply check out, and I am like a robot. People will ask me things, and I will literally treat them as though they are just like a fly on the wall or a mosquito buzzing around my head. It's just like, boom, go away. I'm in work mode.
So this is actually, now I don't want you to take this wrong when I'm about to say at all. Don't take it wrong because that's the initial reaction. It's a sociopathic tendency. Now, what I mean by that is you have an innate ability to compartmentalize your emotion in order to get a job done.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we got to put the dog down. Well, let's get the shovels.
Right. Yeah.
And then your opposite is crying and get the dog's favorite blankie and toys and put it in the hole and say a prayer and yada, 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 yada. You're just very efficient. You're very quick. You're very direct. You get it done. And then you can go have a coffee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's 100% true.
And it doesn't mean you don't care. It means caring doesn't hijack you.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, that's completely true.
So you could be a great assassin. You would get in, get it done, and get out.
Because I can check my emotions at the door.
That's exactly right.
Get in, do the job, and not have my emotions interfere with them.
You could be a sniper. You could be, you know, I have a job to do. You see them interview war heroes. I'm not a hero. I just was doing my job.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
So they're not even looking for accolade because their emotions are not part of that equation. So you do things much better than you do people.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
So you're like a project manager. And what happens is people become a part of the project. So they're project.
Yeah.
More than their people.
Do you ever do these analyses and have people observe that the very first thing they need to do is have their wife listen to or see their analysis results to help them understand their partner better? That's the thought going through my head.
You wouldn't believe the letters and the things I get from doing this. So your patience is what we call situational. It can go up and down. But it doesn't vary that much because you have this overriding dominant anger emotion that causes you to push rather than pull. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now let's look at your fear emotion.
Okay. And this is the fourth of four.
This is the fourth. So we got anger, optimism, patience, and fear.
Gotcha.
I want to say this one thing. I don't think I covered it. Optimism is a emotion that resides in the limbic system, where religion comes from, where certain highs from recreational drugs come from, where sexual arousal comes from. It's a feeling part of the brain. You don't stay in there. You can visit it, but you don't live there. Your opposite lives there. So they make decisions based upon how they feel, whereas you make decisions based upon the facts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Okay. So if it doesn't make sense, you're likely not going to do it unless you trust the person, extremely trust somebody. You're going to take their word for it because you know they've done their homework. Either way, you don't dabble into areas where, you know, you're taking a chance, so to speak, when it comes to information. So you're very logical. You reside in your, not in your limbic system, which when they see a garden hose, they see a snake. You're seeing a garden hose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah. Everybody sees snake first because that's how our body protects itself. But you go from snake to garden hose really quickly.
Right. Now, that's the optimism, okay? Or that's the fear one?
That's optimism.
Okay.
So because you're not optimistic, you're logical.
Mm-hmm.
You won't dwell on snake, you'll dwell on garden hose.
Right.
Okay? So you can rain on somebody's parade. They like the idea of the snake. So what does that look like? Hey, let's go to the beach. It's going to be great. You're thinking, I just saw on the news that we have a 6% chance of rain. Like, you sure you want to load everything up, take it all out, put it all back in, and come all the way back home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're thinking like that.
Yep.
Like a strategist. Okay. Right. So let's look at fear. Your fear emotion is basically a 30. So no fear. You're independent, self-willed, and stubborn. So you're a rhinoceros. You run 30 miles per hour, but you can only see 31 feet. Now, here's what's interesting. When you're adapting for your work, you go from a 30 to a 50, a 65.
And can you explain what you mean by that?
Your antennas go up.
Okay.
In other words, you go from running on a soccer field to running on a minefield.
When I am in work mode.
When you're in work mode, you're extremely cognizant of errors and mistakes.
Right. Yeah.
So that's when you become the machine. So that's probably most of your time is when you're engaging with somebody, you're doing something, you become very aware of errors and mistakes. It's sort of like dismantling a bomb. You're not laughing, telling jokes, and having a good
very
time.
Very much so. I've been accused of being a perfectionist in work situations. And
that's right. You switch, your fear increases. It basically doubles. Your fear line doubles when you engage. So when you're engaged, in other words, someone who, if you didn't do that, you would run out into the battlefield and never have checked your gun to see if you had bullets in it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what you do is you check the gun first. And then once you realize I got all my ammo, now I'm going out. You do that every time. So you become a style that's machine-esque, or what I call Attila the Hun, which is sort of like kick ass, take names, and make sure you don't hurt any children.
Right. Right. That makes sense.
See, you're very cognizant of a mistake, but at the same time, extremely driven, and you just go into machine mode. So it's not good to talk to you when you're in that mode, unless it's necessary, or else it becomes an interruption.
Right. Yeah.
So I would interrupt you.
Yeah. Which is probably one of the reasons that I've found a complete mistake for me is to do my work at the kitchen table when the family is around.
You actually become dangerous.
Yeah.
I don't mean that in the way it sounds, like you're dangerous in the normal sense. It means it's like messing with a time bomb.
Yeah.
In other words, your intensity is extremely high and no one will see it coming. And out of left field, you're like, boom.
Yeah.
You know, you snap. I don't mean crazy. I mean, you listen, I can't do it here.
Right. Right.
Like, you're so intense.
Yeah, no, my wife will sometimes come up to me when I'm working and ask me if I might be able to take a couple things in the garage and list them on eBay. And I simply look at her blankly and say, email me. and then turn around and keep working.
That's like being in a car, looking straight ahead and being hit by a train on the passenger side when she comes and does that.
Yeah.
So now, based upon the relationship and so forth, how much you love each other, that's going to be what it is.
Oh, yeah. It's taken a while, though, for us. I mean, we've been married for 13 years. It's taken a while for us to get to the point where she knows that any attitude I have when I'm working is not her, it's me, right? So we've been very clear with each other about that. Yeah.
It's you, and it's a reaction to the situation, not the person.
Right, exactly.
So to work with you, I've got to address situations, not you. So rather than saying, what have you done, Ben? I would say, this is interesting how this turned out.
Yeah.
You see, very different. So I deal with the problem and the challenge, not the person, because you're not in that personal space. All right, we got to move quick here.
And by the way, for people listening in, just so you know, I realize that today's show sounds like it's just me getting analyzed by Steven. But the reason I'm releasing this publicly is because I want you to see what a behavioral analysis could do for you. And so, again, go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/behavior if you want to learn more about Steven and what he does. And we'll keep going here. So go ahead, Steven.
Okay. So looking at your attitudes, which is what you want, okay? Your attitudes are your desire framework. So I desire this, but I do that. So we don't always do what we desire. There's some people who think about buying a Hummer, but they come home with a minivan. So their imagination is bigger than their actions. Okay. So looking at your profile, I can't wait to do this. Okay. I'm measuring a line called an aesthetic line. And what that means is it's about unconventional thinking. So you're what I call an alternative thinker. And what that means is you're an artist. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're an artist.
Mm-hmm.
So you have alternative ideas and unconventional thoughts about solving typical problems. So you're going to take a different road than normal. And when I say normal, I mean the norm. In other words, 7 out of 10 people in the world, you know, are between 30 and 50. You're a 68.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically that would be kind of like outside the box style
thinking. You're outside the scope of the norm. So you're an out of the box thinker. Literally, you're out of the norm box. And when it comes to this thinking, it's unconventional. This is like an artist. Now, I'm also measuring a line which is known as a utilitarian line, or sometimes we call it an economic line, and it's about competition. Now, here's something extremely interesting. You are not competitive.
Interesting.
I know.
Why do you say that?
Because you're not high enough here. In other words, you don't value competition as much as you value uniqueness.
Hmm.
So because you value uniqueness, you look like a teacher. This is a professor profile. This is a lecturer.
Mm-hmm.
This is somebody who has these out-of-the-box ideas, places them in a forum in a unique way, and then gathers followers. So it's a presenting profile. So you're more concerned about discovery, uncover, discover, and recover the facts, find a unique and interesting way to present it, and then solve an impossible problem. That's better than money.
Yeah, that would be very much true. I mean, that's really a big, big part of what I do with BenGreenfieldFitness.com. So,
So money that you make, Ben, follows you. In other words, making money is more a result than a goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yeah. And so when I am, and I know we don't have tons of time to dwell on each of these attitudes, but when I am, for example, standing on the starting line of a race, right, like an obstacle race or a triathlon, mm-hmm. it, for me being there, doing that is more of a function of me being hardwired to go out and explore and discover a way to conquer mm-hmm. that course than it is necessarily me having mm-hmm. some kind of a bloodthirsty competitive drive to beat the person next to me.
Right. You are not competitive. It's a misread. Anybody who thinks you're competitive because you're cut or because this, it's a misread mm. altogether. You look the way you do because you're a body artist.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. You're an artist. You're a sculpture.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not just trying to be strong.
Yeah.
Now, some people do this because they're insecure. Most people are in the gym out of insecurity.
Yeah.
Okay. That's just the way it is. Your style is not an insecure style. Your style is very matter of fact. So your style is all about, and whoever, if somebody did say that to you about the outdoors, it's really true with you. You are about the experience. If you compete with anybody, you compete with yourself.
Yeah, that's so true.
But you don't see other people as competitors. You're not a competitor in that respect. Yeah. You're an artist who's competing with your own limitations.
Yeah.
Because you're just flat driven. Listen, nobody else has to be on the planet. You're still going to try to get up on top of Mount Everest.
Yeah, that's very much true. Interesting.
There's some people, they wouldn't do that unless somebody was watching.
Yeah.
Completely different. Okay. All right. Let's look at your individualism. If you're a penny in a jar of pennies, you're going to be the red penny because you're 80 on individualism, where the majority of the country is between 55 and 36. And you're an 80. Okay. So this is in the innovator. So you're very innovative. Like, you're not going to be a penny in the jar of pennies. You're going to be the red penny and the only red yeah. penny. So you're looking for uniqueness, autonomy, and freedom.
Yep, very much true.
So you are a freedom seeker. You want to be free from. You want to be independent of, not dependent on. So if you're giving a speech and your teleprompter goes out, your speech gets better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hate teleprompters.
Because now you can say what you wanted to say. Yeah. So Bill Clinton, his speech gets better. George W. Bush, speech gets better.
Yeah.
Joe Biden, his speech would get better. No one would know the teleprompter went out.
Yeah, well, every TV show I've done, I've refused the teleprompter because I hate it so much.
Yes. That's why Donald Trump refuses the teleprompter, because it gets in his mm-hmm. way. Okay, Barack Obama, if he doesn't have a teleprompter, he can't do the speech.
Yeah.
Why? Because he needs a roadmap. It doesn't mean he's not smart. It means, you want me to build the deck? Give me the blueprints. I'll build it just like you want it. Whereas Bill Clinton's like, it's just a deck. What the hell are any blueprints for?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you think. So you have this intuitive part to you, and you like this freedom and this autonomy, and to kind of have the freedom to do your own thing. Okay, here's something else that's different. You don't need to be in charge. In other words, you don't need the credit. Like some people, like, they need the credit. They need people to know they're the boss. Mm-hmm. They need people to know that they authored that idea. They need people to know that. You don't. In other words, you're very comfortable not having to have to shoulder all the responsibility that comes with being in charge of something.
Right.
You can openly share it, share ideas. You're extremely open-minded. You're one of the most open-minded people I've profiled all last year.
And that is the individualism score?
It's part of it.
Okay.
It's half of it.
Okay.
So your individualism score is an 80, but your regulatory score is a 13.
Okay.
And what that means is the regulatory person is the black and white thinker. In other words, there's only one way to skin a cat, my way.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I don't care how we skin the cat, just get the cat skinned.
Right.
Right. Now, if you have a better way of skinning the cat, please tell me about it and we'll do that.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you're doing. Some people, they're like, no, even if your way is better than mine, I'm not doing it because it's not my way.
Yeah.
So you're the opposite of that. So for you, when you look at rules, you're going to sit back and make a determination of whether or not that rule's worthy for you to follow it.
Right, right, exactly.
Okay, you look at that rule and you might think, you know what, that is the dumbest rule I've ever seen. So we're not doing that. Okay, you have that ability. Your opposite, no matter what the rule is, they must follow
it. Quick question for you. Is this type of approach or this type of behavioral analysis coming from the school of thought that this stuff is genetically hardwired, or is it more of like a nature versus nurture type of thing?
Okay. Everybody's born with a cardinal trait, a bent, okay? A behavioral bent. If you've had children, they're different at 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Same family, same parents, same environment, but they are different. You can have a choleric baby or a melancholic baby. And they're just, from the get-go, they're that way. So dig up a diamond out of the ground. You birth a child into the world. You put that diamond into a rock tumbler, and you tumble it for a while, and it comes out looking different, but it's still a diamond. So your environment polishes the stone you already are.
The reason I ask is
and how you're polished determines what going to happen after that.
Yeah, I was homeschooled K through 12, and I've always wondered how much that's influenced my perception of things like rules, thinking outside the box, etc., because I pretty much grew up educating myself.
That will have an influence. Yes. So that environment was a certain way, and it was that way all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you know, looking at this profile, you're able to make this adaptation to where, you know, rules are important. You understand that, but they can be broken.
Yeah.
And so let me say a couple of things, because I don't want to be able to not do your HVP here.
Yeah, sure.
Your altruistic line is a 46, which means you care about people. You care. Some might say you have a funny way of showing it because they're judging the book by the cover, which is the behavioral piece. The observable indicators, I'm watching you deal with the clerk who, you know, is arguing with you and they're wrong. And so I'm watching that, so I'll make a determination without really knowing you. But when I look at this profile, you're a caring person.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So you probably don't really like it if somebody's not pulling their own weight. So that means what you'll do is, you'll work hard for people that are doing everything in their power to help themselves, but you might not have time for somebody who doesn't do that.
That's so true. Yeah.
Okay. So if I'm on your team, I better pull at least all my weight, if we're going to get along.
Yep.
But if I'm mooching or taking credit for things you've done, and that's okay if I'm doing everything in my power to do my part, you might even let me get away with that because you're like, touche. But if I'm not doing that, I'm marked already.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, one of the things that I tend to detest most is laziness in people. And I tend to be very aloof and judgmental towards folks who don't seem to be driven.
That's because you drive in your sleep.
Yeah.
You probably have driving dreams.
Yeah.
Now, okay, you're also above average on your theoretical line, which means your brain is very itchy. The only way to scratch it is to learn new things. So you may find a way to do something, and you find these insights and do it, and then you find later something else. You will abandon the former and go with the latter. And you'll keep doing that. You have the ability to change direction as necessary. In other words, some people, they have an idea and they live with that idea. They do that idea. And then they find out, oh, that's been disproven. They don't let it go.
Mm-hmm.
They keep doing it. Well, that's the way my grandfather did it. So they stick with traditional ways, but they can't stand change. And so They fear what they don't understand. You welcome it.
Yep, makes sense. That's spot on.
So you will always climb. You will consistently grow and learn and grow and learn, and you can't stop because of this itchy brain of yours. You'd rather be taught than entertained.
Yep.
And so because of that, you have a strong drive towards getting to the bottom of things. So how deep does the rabbit hole go? You want to know. And if it goes further, let's go.
Yep.
But we need more oxygen. Don't be such a baby.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
You see what I mean? I mean, it's incredible. All right. I want to look at the HVP results because this is going to be hopefully mind-blowing.
Sure. And by the way, we had 4 primary emotions: anger, optimism, patience, and fear. We had 7 attitudes: desire, individualism, regularity, altruism, theoretical. And what were the other two? What am I missing?
Okay, political.
Okay.
Which is a drive for control.
Okay.
The first one was aesthetic. Economic, which is competitive, bottom line thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Individualistic, which is the need to be unique and outside of the box. And you named the others. So,
got it.
Very, very powerful when the combinations are at differing heights of intensity. It all means something different.
Yeah. Now, before we jump into the HVP, when people go through this profile with you, do they get some kind of like a PDF or a printout or something of that nature?
Yes. Yes. Gotcha. I didn't print out the big one for you because you're getting a full on debrief, but when they do it, they end up with about 68 pages.
Okay. Well, if Steven sends me anything, for those of you listening in, I will link to or embed it in the show notes for you over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/behavior.
Yeah.
All right. So
8 pages for you.
Wow. Amazing.
Okay.
Okay. HVP. Let's do it.
All right. So here's what happens. Everything the human mind evaluates and organizes, it does it through 6 separate views, but they are integrated in a sense. So this is about integration of views. If you sprain your ankle or break your ankle, imagine getting 6 separate x-rays from different viewpoints. So now we know exactly what's going on with that ankle. All right. 3 of these views we call outer world. 3 we call inner world. And I'm going to go through these rather quickly for the sake of time.
Sure.
So one of your outer world views is empathy. In other words, how well do you, Ben, understand how your choices are impacting other people? You're coming in with what's called a crystal clear score. In other words, you know exactly how your decision and your choice is going to affect those around you. Okay, let me measure something else. How important is it to you? It's extremely important. When you make decisions, you take into account how this is going to affect the people around me when you do it.
Like a people pleaser?
No.
No. Okay.
Because you're not a people pleaser. You have a heightened awareness about how this decision is going to affect those people. So you're a I don't hurt people person.
Okay. Gotcha.
I help them. Okay. You know, Donald Trump hurts people. Okay. He starts out as an interview with a female reporter. Let's start by saying you're pathetic.
Yeah.
Doesn't even know the girl.
Yeah.
Okay. You wouldn't do that.
So even though I'm an assassin sniper, I don't actually like to hurt people.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So I can easily misjudge you if I just watch your action.
Mm-hmm.
But in your mind, you're holding the baby down. It's screaming and kicking and looking at you with wild eyes while you're pouring the medicine down its throat saying, believe me, this is for your own good.
Yeah. Yep.
That's how you do it. So whatever you do, in your mind, it's designed to help, not harm.
Right.
Some people, they don't care how their decisions affect other people.
Yep.
Some people don't know how their decisions affect other people. They're saying, I don't know why everybody's so upset. Okay? You do. All right, next one, practical thinking. This is about comparative choices. So if I said to you, Ben, I want you to go down to the dog pound and find me a puppy for my 3 little kids. And you get there and there's 20 puppies. What are you going to do? So how well do you understand how your choices and your solutions are influencing the targeted results? In other words, I got to get Steve a good puppy for the kids. You have a crystal clear understanding. So you see those puppies clearly. All right, they're all dogs. How important is it to you that you pick the right one? Extremely important. Very results oriented. You are going to come home with the best puppy. I don't have to worry about it. You are not going to come home with the pit bull. And then when I say, Ben, my kids are like 2, 3, and 4. You're not going to say, but he was cute.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be like, you know what? Probably a beagle would be good for that family.
Yeah.
You're going to think about it. You're going to know. You're not randomly grabbing a dog.
Right.
You're making comparative choices. So you have excellent understanding, and it's extremely important, which means the odds of you getting the right dog are extremely high.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. System judgment. How well do you understand how your decisions and choices are working with established structures, rules, standards? Okay, you have a clear understanding, but you're reactive, which means you have a negative cautious bias, which means I'll look at these rules and determine which one makes sense. But I'm not going to just blanketly go, just obey it because somebody told me to. They might be stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you do it.
Right.
So you pick and choose based upon your own horse sense.
Yep.
All right. So that's your outer world views. Now look at your inner world views. So just like empathy is about understanding and appreciating others, self-esteem is about understanding and appreciating yourself. So where's your self-esteem score? You have a clear score, which means you understand that it's important to know how your choices are impacting how you value yourself. But you have a double negative bias attention score, which means you're extremely demanding on yourself and you're very critical of yourself. You might win a race and think after, damn it, I could have done better.
Yeah.
So think of this. Take that demand upon yourself, couple it with extreme high dominance, anger emotion, couple it with super creativity, and what do you get? You get a person who is relentless, that will never give up, and will keep striving to be better and better and better.
Yeah.
And nobody can stop you as a rule.
Yeah, that's 100% true.
Okay, now let's look at this role awareness. How well do you understand how your choices are impacting your valuation of your current role in life? Like, who am I? Who's Ben Greenfield? You have a clear understanding that you need to know who you are, and you know exactly who you are. You have attentive social role image, which means I know who I am, and I know who I'm not, and I just stick with who I am, and that's what I do.
Yeah.
You get some people, they have a very low score here. They don't know who they are, and they're trying to get into an organization to be the VP. And I'll measure it, and I go, you don't know if you're a VP or a shoe salesman. They don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know who they are.
Yeah.
They're hoping this will help them figure it out.
Right, right.
Well, that's not very bright to be hiring that person at $300,000 a
yeah.
year.
Yeah, maybe that's also why I've been so resistant to these type of analyses, because I've always thought that I understand myself.
Listen, Ben, you don't need an analysis. You're right. You don't. You have strong social role image. Most of the people I do this for need this. That's why they're paying for it.
Right.
Or a company or whatever. They need it. Now, how you see yourself is how you'll exercise. It's how you'll do fitness. Like some people, they can't do fitness without being with other people.
Mm-hmm.
They see you and they're like, why can't I? Well, they're wired differently. They're completely wired differently. So they need a different kind of environment. So you have to construct and design the environment to fit the behavior. All right. Self-direction. Where is Ben going? How well do you understand how your choices are contributing to where you believe you need to be in the future? You have a very clear understanding of where you're going, and you are perfectionist, idealistic, and insistent on arrival. You will go wherever you want, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know where you're going and you know you're going to arrive. You're just waiting for it to happen. Now, I've used this on people coming into an organization. Let's say we're hiring a very important role, maybe even a partner. And I look at this line here and it says, you know, unconventional clarity, maybe visible clarity. And then when it comes to how important is it to them, it's not important at all. So going into that position is like trying on shoes. Let's see if these fit. Well, what if they don't? Well, we'll get another pair. So this company is going to invest 6 months of training, high dollar salary, and recruiting fees for somebody who's trying on the organization like a shoe to see if it fits?
Yeah.
You see, you will likely do nothing else other than what you're doing because this graph tells me you have found your niche.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know where you're going. You know you're going to arrive. And what drives you is your image of self. You are actually driven by trying to be better. Now, because of this, Ben, you're likely 10 times the person you think you are. So you're, for whatever reason, you're very hard on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you make mistakes, it's grievous for you.
Yeah.
Whereas other people are like, sorry, my bad.
Right.
You're like, you know, sorry, how could I be so stupid?
Yep. Yep. Makes perfect sense.
How could I have done that? That'll never happen again.
Yeah.
You really work hard at making sure you do things right the first time, and you're relentless. So your profile is truly, Ben, an anomaly.
Really? Interesting. You're not just saying that. You don't tell everyone that they're a unique snowflake.
No. Yeah. I'd say 40% of the people are crying.
Interesting.
When I do them.
Interesting.
Because of one thing or another.
Well, and so that's the HPV, the ones that you, or the
HVP.
Yeah, HVP.
Yeah, that I just went through.
Well, this, and I know that we freaking flew through this in the limited time that we had available. My mind is absolutely blown. I mean, it's kind of seldom that I will have a podcast interview with someone and be telling myself, oh gosh, I'm going to need to go for a walk after this, put this thing in my earbuds and listen to it again and take more notes. But the fact is I am intrigued and blown away. And like I said, I really didn't know what to expect going in. And for those of you listening in, I really, truly did not know what to expect. So I took the analysis and Stephen and I Skyped this morning for about 60 seconds before the call and then just jumped in. So Stephen, this is amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Now, can you imagine knowing everything about everybody you're highly associated with, especially if you're trying to, you know, produce income with them and things like that, or maybe a partner or your kids?
Oh, I mean, like there are people that work with me, you know, in my company who I want to get this analysis for now, and I'd like to get it from my wife as well. Right.
Now, I want to say to you, the one you took was the more extended version.
Gotcha.
Most people just take the behavior and the attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do the HVP. I do that when it's a very important hire or a very important decision, and the person they need is a decision maker.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to know how they make those decisions.
Yeah.
So this was my top analysis.
And this one was called the what?
The executive summary.
Executive summary. Okay.
And it's a 1.5 hour debrief.
Now for people who are listening, who want to get this, you know, like if the CEO is listening, who wants to get this for their employees or someone, you know, just wants to know more about themselves and the way that they tick. Can you give folks kind of like some action steps? Are you going to have some kind of a link or something that I can give people to go to if they visit the show notes, something like that?
Yeah, definitely. We'll create that, and then, you know, they can take that and just follow those simple steps.
Okay.
Now, you know, typically when I'm doing a call, we go over the graph and then they ask me, okay, so this is why this is happening to me. What do I do?
Right.
And so I call it uncover, discover, recover.
Gotcha.
Most of the time it's one call. Now, I had a guy from Australia, he called back today because, you know, he had to because we couldn't finish it because there's too much going on.
Right.
So it depends.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Well, and also when we were emailing back and forth, you mentioned that you might be able to connect the people who are listening in with some kind of a discount or a coupon to use. Do you have any idea what kind of discount you might be able to offer to folks who want to do this? Or I honestly, and complete transparency for everybody listening in, I did this analysis for free with Steven. And so I don't know how much it costs or anything like that, but can you fill us in on like the cost, the discount, things of that nature? Mm-hmm.
Yes. So typically what you just did is $525 okay. and an hour and a half.
Okay.
That's the typical rate.
Okay. Gotcha.
What I'm doing is taking 100 off of that for your listeners.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. That's very generous. Thank you.
The other one is typically 3.25 with a 1 hour debrief.
Okay.
And I'm taking 50 off of that one.
Okay. Perfect. So by the time, and folks, if you're listening in, we pre-record these podcasts, but by the time this interview gets released, I'll be sure that in the show notes, I have all the details in terms of how to get a hold of Steven if you want to do this, and also the specific code or the specific page to visit if you want to get a discount on a profile like the one that Steven and I just talked about. So again, everything in terms of the show notes are over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/behavior, bengreenfieldfitness.com/behavior, spelled the way Americans spell it, BEHAVIOR. So, Steven, I know, yes. I know you got to run, I got to run, but I want to thank you again for being so generous with your time, for going through this analysis with me. And again, you know, I see now at the beginning why you said, you were found at 12 years old to have this crazy skill of being able to read people, because I can't say anything that you have said in the past hour about me has not been spot on. So, again, I'm blown away. My head is spinning right now with all this very cool information. Can't wait to download this one, listen to it again, and also, send it over to my loved one. And and thank you so much, man.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure, Ben. And thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Well, folks, this is Ben Greenfield and Steven Sisler. And he also has a book. He has a website. I'll link to all that in the show notes over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/behavior. Thanks for listening in and have a healthy week.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.